This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning and welcome into The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. A new voice on this side of the microphone today. Jimmy Kay stepping in, filling in, carrying on a long tradition.
All
of
right.
People sitting across from Bob, yeah. Master Gardener.
Yeah.
Welcome in, Bob. Welcome to the show and welcome to another somewhat wet Saturday morning.
Yeah. I'll spread for people. We got to get used to the weather. That's all.
We do. Yeah. And if you don't like it much, you just wait a few minutes and usually changes for you.
True.
That's the good news. But it seems like Mother Nature is taking care of the watering, letting us sit back, relax, and learn a little bit about gardening.
Exactly. Yeah.
So before anything gets started, I do want to say the phone lines will be open, same as usual, 1-814-368-WESB. That's 368-9372. So you can call in if you have any questions this morning. I'm keeping an eye on our emails as well, garden@WESB.com. And we'll have our Facebook Live up and running here momentarily.
All right.
How are we doing today, Bob?
Good. Real good. Despite the weather, you know, it's still good gardening weather.
Right.
I wanted to start out because this really struck me the other day, and it has for 50, 60 years. It's becoming a big practice, you know, to do no-till gardening. And I talked last week about that. I still rototill. I like to rototill for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't mention one other reason. Your soil this time of year.
Okay.
Can be warmed at the very surface, an untilled soil. That's where we haven't turned it over, whether you use a rototiller or a shovel or a pitchfork, whatever you want to use to loosen the soil.
Okay.
And as you go deeper into what we call the root zone, you know, you get below 2, 3, 4 inches, all of a sudden it'll really cool off. Now, this time of year, that cool soil underneath can be quite a shock to a lot of plants. Mm. Most of the plants we're going to plant, annuals and vegetables, like tropical warm season. So they really dislike that cold soil, and it can really shock them and mess up their hormones and send them into a cycle where it kind of looks like they're failing. So that's another reason I like to rototill. We loosen up that soil. The soil can warm up much quicker. It possibly can only take a day or just a few days to warm up so that when we do plant that plant, you know, it'll adjust a lot easier because most of them have come from a greenhouse or a growing situation where it's warm. So that's what they need. So you may want to even test that, you know, when you're planting, you know, you dig the little hole and feel that temperature. And maybe if it's still quite cold down there, and it could be this time of year, then maybe hold off if you can.
Just wait as long as you can to let the ground warm up. Now, is there any tricks to help speed that process up, or are you just kind of at the mercy of the sun?
No. The way it tricks to speed it up, if I can get it out here.
Yeah.
Is going to be
there.
Like,
you're there.
Rototilling or loosening the soil of any way that lets the cold air out of the soil easier and lets the sun get down in there and warm that soil deeper so that the plant can accept it. Now, if you don't, you know, you're not going to kill a plant, but you can affect its growth. You know, it may stunt its growth for those first few weeks. So just be prepared for that. If you don't loosen the soil, you know, maybe your plant will show a little effects, but it'll eventually perk up and start growing normally. But I highly recommend loosening the soil so that you can warm it up, that bed. Now this doesn't go for containers. Containers, you're going to be dumping that fresh soil in there. It's going to be warm already.
Yeah.
So I'm just talking about your garden beds, your yard. It's something to think about and possibly maybe concentrate on a little bit.
Okay. And if you you mentioned that it's going to start the cycle with possibly a signs of failure, Will that, for something like a perennial, will that affect it at all in the future? Is it remembering that cycle?
Yeah, oh, well, plants do have a memory. Yes, yeah. They will. And perennials are going to be different than annuals, you know.
Right.
They're already acclimated to a temperature change year after year. But annuals, they are not, because they come from a warm part of the world.
Okay.
So it affects the annuals more than trees, perennials,
yeah.
Our lawns. Yes.
Okay.
Another thing I wanted to talk about, because I know that a lot of people will be outside and they'll start to notice insects. And
right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So the cycle here is important to a lot of us. You know, just because you see an insect or two doesn't mean you have to get out some insecticide and start spraying and think all things are lost. How the cycle of nature's cycle of abundance goes.
Yes. Which we saw recently with I think the ticks probably last year.
Yeah.
That was, the worst I had seen the ticks, I believe, was last year. And now this year is you don't hear about it nearly as much.
Not yet.
Not yet. Right. Yeah. It's still a little bit early.
Yeah.
But I a couple of years ago, we had the mosquitoes was outrageous. And then it kind of dies down a little bit. But I do remember one year, moths were covering, at night, you'd see the street signs, like yeah. business signs yeah. outside. They'd be covered in moths.
Yeah.
And then the next year, they would die down.
Yeah. Bit. Yeah. That's that nature's cycle of abundance. But to take that even a little bit further is like with the ticks, that really coincides with what we call masting of the oaks. Masting is... oaks, a lot of our oaks don't produce a heavy crop of acorns every year.
Mm-hmm.
They do sporadically every 3 to 5 years, they produce a large crop. And then when they do produce that large crop, then that makes it easier on the wildlife to survive and multiply. So the wildlife population increases and then, of course, the tick population can increase because there are more wildlife there. So that's one of the reasons that ebb and flow with the tick population.
Okay. Yeah.
And one of the shows, I'll really go into that in depth on how the oak really controls all life in the forest, the oak tree itself. But talking about the insects, another thing to remember, only 2% of the insects in Bradford are harmful insects. All the rest are what we call beneficial.
2%?
Only 2%.
Really?
Yeah. I know that's an amazing number, and it's hard to believe, but it is true that
that's only, wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of those 2%.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah, when it comes to insects, you're always talking about the billions.
Sure, yeah.
So be aware of that. And with that nature's cycle of abundance, the bad insects are usually a little more cold hardy. And a lot of them can give birth to pregnant young so that the cycle can continue really quickly. So the bad insect populations can come on sooner and they can multiply quite quickly.
Okay, of course, yeah.
Then that all of a sudden sends a signal to the beneficial insects, the ones that feed on those bad insects. They wait for that population for good reason. They don't want to all of a sudden start to come to life or give birth to new ones if there isn't a food source there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they wait till that bad insect population grows a little bit,
yeah.
Then they come to life and then start attacking the bad. So in gardening, you know, a lot of us recommend to be patient, you know, and first bad insects aren't really going to be a problem down the road.
Okay.
Because eventually the good insects are going to come in there if you allow them. Now, if you start spraying insects or insecticide, you've probably destroyed that good insect population too.
Yeah.
And that you've just slowed up that whole process and maybe even stopped it totally.
Then you'll just start with the bad insects over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and gotcha. Like I said, a lot of the bad insects can even give birth to young that are ready to give birth again.
You're right. Right.
So their population can explode quickly. So try to be patient. I gave you that hint about the white piece of paper underneath the plant tap, you know, and if you see a half a dozen little things crawling around, that's really no big deal for most plants. But when you start to see 2-3 dozen, then you may have to do something. And of course, I highly recommend the first thing you do is a good hard spray with your garden hose, and that will knock a lot of those insects right off. And most generally, those insects that get knocked off will run out of energy and starve to death before they get back up to their feeding zone.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's a good way to start. So don't jump out with that insecticide right away and start spraying. Be a little patient. Yeah, some damage is going to be done to your plants, but most of the time, you know, the plants are, especially the annuals and vegetables, are in such a great growth spurt that they just outgrow that damage quickly. Okay.
And much more able to take much more damage, obviously, than the insects are.
They are. Yes.
More resilient.
And they are capable of, once an insect starts to attack them, or a group of insects, they are able to change their chemical makeup that can start to poison those bad insects. So instead of you spraying the insecticide, the plant is making an insecticide.
You have to give it the time to allow for it.
Yeah, to allow for that all to happen.
Yeah.
So again, you know, try to be patient and accept a little bit of damage, and nature will take care of itself.
Sometimes we forget, despite all of the chemicals and all the man-made stuff that we've made, somehow, despite all of our best efforts, wildflowers still grow.
Yeah.
Berries still grow out in the forest.
Exactly.
They find a way. Yeah.
And they have for millions of years until we came along.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just something to think about. And boy, I'm sorry I drugged that way out.
No, that's fine.
But another something really important I wanted to talk about is the cemetery plantings, because Memorial Day coming up.
Sure.
I know it's not a great day to do it, you know, but of course, it's gonna
tomorrow might be a little better, by the way.
Okay, good. It's going to be important to loosen that soil at the headstone, maybe add some new soil, and you can use potting soil or garden soil, whatever you want to use. Mm-hmm. Mix it up real well, loosen that soil so it can warm up quickly. And then some of the plants you choose can be pretty important, because most of us aren't going to go to the cemetery every day and water the plants and take care of them. So I brought a few of the more hardy ones.
Okay.
And you probably hear me talk about the geranium a lot.
The geranium does seem to be a favorite.
And for a good reason. You know, it's been around. It was probably one of the first bedding plants that man ever used. And for a good reason, because it can withstand wet, it can withstand cold, it can withstand heat, it can withstand dry, and it has a beautiful flower. So the geranium is one that I'm going to recommend. And there's a lot of them, but I just brought a few examples. This is a zinnia. They come in a lot of different colors.
Yep.
Zinnia is another one of those that basically a lot of us can plant it and forget it. Most of the time, it's just going to take care of itself. Even if we don't have a rain, we seem to always have a heavy dew. And that can be equivalent to a rain.
Yeah.
That, especially if we have amended or put in the right amount of soil, the right kind of soil.
Sure.
It's going to absorb that moisture and help supply that plant with the moisture it needs.
Okay.
Wax leaf begonias, and they're going to come in a dark leaf like this, and they're going to come in the green leaf like this. And that's just your choice. They're both going to react the same, and they're both going to be able to accept a sunny location or a shady location. So they're really pretty fantastic in that respect.
Yeah, perfect for the cemetery burials, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Next to the gravestones, you never know if they're going to be in or out of the sunshine.
Exactly. A lot of cemeteries have big grown trees, and so there's a lot of shade in cemeteries. So waxleaf begonias are great. You know, even a geranium can take tolerate, I'll say, tolerate a bit of shade.
Yeah.
And still be nice. I mean, maybe it won't have 10 blossoms on it, but it'll have 6 or 5 or something like that. It'll still bloom. So I wanted to cover that. And there's a lot more annuals like that, but these are the good old-fashioned ones for a reason, because they've been successful.
The ones that have held up and stood through the test of time.
But another way of going about it for some of us is perennials.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't have to purchase the annuals every mm-hmm. year. So again, the most important part is preparing that bed or soil, you know, so that when you do plant, the plants can settle in quickly and become established quickly with the perennials. And the first one I'll mention is the hosta. That was the very first imported perennial in America.
Really?
The hosta, yep. That goes way, way back. And of course, it's a tough plant. Many of the hosta can withstand sun or shade. As a matter of fact, technically, they tolerate shade. They don't really love shade. They tolerate
shade. Is that right?
Yes. They're really a sun-loving plant, like most plants are.
Sure.
So the hosta is a great one. You can plant it, and it can be there for hundreds of years. Another one, and there's others too, but I just brought these two examples. Another one of my favorites is what they call coral bells or heuchera, however you want to pronounce it. That's another one that withstands shade, withstands sun. So it's ideal for any cemetery.
Yeah. That one adds a little bit of color too.
Yeah. Well, the hostas can come in a lot of different colors too. And a lot of different flower heights. Some will flower 3-4 foot high. Some only flower just above the foliage. So, So it pays to do a little research. Some are a dwarf plant that'll only grow 10, 12 inches wide and a few inches tall. Some will grow quite large, 3-4 foot high, 3-4 foot wide even.
Questions that you might want to ask when you're checking out. Because I notice a lot of times people will just buy the pretty thing, right?
Yeah.
Which is normal.
Yeah.
Which is what you want. But those kind of specifics, whether it's an employee at a greenhouse might not, you know, they don't know whether or not you know for sure.
Yeah.
Or if you're just, you know, getting the pretty thing.
Yep.
So a couple extra questions would go a long way. And not only that, but it opens the door to them explaining, okay, and basing your knowledge level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. And most of the plants you go to purchase are going to have what they call a label in it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably can't see that, but most of the plants are going to have a label, and it's just packed full of information.
Oh, yeah. Check the back of the label.
Yeah. Check the back of the label. That's a good move. Going to tell you whether it likes sun or shade, what zone.
Mm-hmm.
We got to know the zone for the perennial. We're a zone 5. So a 5, 6, 7, 8, that's all good for our area. It's going to tell you the height, how far you should space them. It's going to tell you the sunlight requirements. And some of them even are going to tell you what plants it pairs well with.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of good information on there about the plant. So you can really educate yourself in just a minute or two.
Yeah, I don't often think that little trick to just look at the back of the label.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times they color code the stuff and that's useful information, but
yeah. You
just turn that little label around and there's everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Huh? So we'll pause and take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, Worth W. Smith. We'll come back. Phone lines are open, 368-9372, 368-WESB phone lines and emails as well. And we are on live at facebook.com/WESB1075 if you want to comment along that way. So it's the Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith with Master Gardener Bob Harris on B107.5 FM.
It's time to start tackling your springtime projects. That means a few trips to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. You'll find plenty of railroad ties and lumber in stock, blue plastic barrels, and of course all the gardening tools and grass seeds you'll need. Now at Worth W. Smith, check out their new Blackstone griddles. Remember to fill up your propane tanks too. And if you're thinking of getting an air conditioner this summer, get it now while the selection is best. As always, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to the Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris, sponsored by Worth W. Smith Hardware. We are just getting into or just wrapping up some of your this planting the cemetery flowers for Memorial Day. But I did have one other question that I almost forgot to ask. Now that we're at the end of the month, at the end of May, some of us don't want to incriminate myself too much here. Some of us might be looking at those Mother's Day plants from a few weeks ago, thinking, well, what'd I do wrong over here?
Yeah.
Now, and maybe more specifically, incriminating myself further, I have some bright pink petunias. And it is in a hanging basket. And I didn't go out and get the fully overgrown flowers popping out and hanging out over the basket. I went for a more, you know, tucked in basket.
Good.
And some of those bulbs, it seems, I don't know if it's an overwater, which I know is most plant failures are overwater. Yep. But but we're just kind of going off, you know, the amount of rain that we've gotten. And is there anything, what are the first steps I should take to try to spruce up that plant a little bit?
Boy, I'm glad you brought that up.
Good.
Because I bought a pink petunia for Mother's Day.
Good.
Yeah, too. And it's looking ugly.
Yeah.
And it's looking ugly. And again, that's just part of nature. It came straight out of a warm greenhouse.
Mm, right.
Went right onto my back deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we get all these rains and cool temperatures.
Sure.
And petunias just don't like that.
Yeah.
Petunias came from South America. And it's a real interesting story how they got here. I won't go into it right now. So they like warm and... they like lots of sun so they can dry out quickly. And although they do like a good amount of water, but there's a fine line between a good amount and too much.
Yeah, and a flood.
So some of those hanging baskets or potted plants that we bought for Mother's Day may be looking a little ragged.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up on them. The weather's going to change. Temperatures will rise, more sunshine. They will perk up, and then they'll start doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that you bought the same one I did.
Yeah, well, we went, I went and took my daughter out to one of the greenhouses, and we were going to get flowers for mom and for grandma.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, we gravitated towards, she knows everyone's favorite color.
Oh, okay.
She's a big,
whoever, beautiful.
Whoever is their favorite color, they must want all of the things that color. So we got purple petunias for grandma and pink petunias for mom.
Beautiful.
And they were very nice baskets.
Yeah.
Great looking baskets. You know, four weeks later.
Yeah.
Not so much. Not so much. So you just kind of push through it. Wait for that weather to flip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Truly.
Still, you know, go ahead and purchase those plants before the selection runs out.
Yeah.
But be aware that it could get some bad weather and they could look a little ragged.
Yeah, overnights we're still getting down to low 40s.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they will pull through, and sooner or later, you know, they'll start doing what they're supposed to, growing and flowering abundantly if you take care of them correctly. You know, give them lots of fertilizer, especially petunias. Petunias are what I call garden pigs.
Okay,
they just can't get enough to eat, so don't be afraid to really fertilize your petunia hanging basket or potted plant or even bedding plant. They'll really enjoy being fertilized on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And so that's a neat
perfect
story. Yeah.
Well, see, then so that's how easy it is to ask a question.
Yeah.
At 1-814-368-9372. You can ask yours as well.
Yeah. And I got to sit there every morning and look out the kitchen window at that poor petunia and say, geez, did I fail?
Do a little head shake.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Luckily, my wife is very forgiving and she doesn't bring it up much.
Fair enough.
So something else I want to get into is another easy plant for anyone to grow, lettuce. And I'm going to talk about why. You can grow lettuce in a pot. You can grow lettuce in a window box. You can grow it in the ground. Lettuce is a real easy, forgiving plant. You can grow it in the sun. You can grow it in shade even. But one of the reasons I feel you should grow lettuce, most of our lettuce comes from California. in a place, and escapes my mind. A very famous place out in where that's all there is, gardens after gardens.
Sure,
Happy Valley.
Yeah, okay.
It's called Happy Valley, California. And they've been growing lettuce there for 100 years in the same fields.
Yeah.
And of course, they've depleted the nutrients no matter how much they amend the soil. They still, because they grow several crops of lettuce out there, not just one like we would do here and let nature give a chance to replenish the soil. So they have to do a lot of care to get that lettuce to grow and able to ship it to us here in Bradford.
Okay.
So what that amounts to, and I'm going to give you some numbers that may be mind-boggling, but they're true, in that they have to add per acre of lettuce field, over 600 pounds of fertilizer, and then 600 pounds of pesticide.
My word.
Because as you over-fertilize a plant, it becomes more and more desirable to the insects and other pests. So pesticides includes fungicides, insecticides, herbicides, all those things. So they have been
because they don't have time to deal with a specific plant. They need to treat the one plant as the entire acreage.
Yeah. So then they've got to harvest it. And that usually requires machinery along with people. Then they've got to truck it from the field to a holding center. Mm. Then they've got to truck it from that holding center to the grocery outlets. Then they got to truck it from them grocery outlets to Bradford, Pennsylvania. So they've used a tremendous amount of fuel, a tremendous amount of fertilizers, and pesticides to get it to our table.
For our little head of iceberg lettuce.
And so a lot of tests have been done on that lettuce. And when it finally does get to our lettuce, and it's a good week old by then, maybe older, it really has no nutritional value in it at all.
It's near
zero.
Yeah.
Now, the lettuce you grow in your hanging basket, window box, pot, garden, wherever you grow it, you haven't done any of that. You've let that plant feed off the soil and the rain that we have, and it's loaded with nutrients.
Yeah.
So that when you do eat the lettuce that you've grown, which is so easy to grow, all you do is sprinkle seeds on the ground and kind of pat them in a little bit and water them and keep them moist, and they'll start growing within days. You're getting a nutritious food that way.
Boy, isn't it wild? Because maybe it's just me, but I feel like I've had this conversation where we grew up. My generation, I think, grew up with that as just kind of a fact.
Yeah,
that iceberg lettuce has no nutritional value. Yeah. It's the same as drinking a glass of water or something, you know, of that effect. And that's not true at all. That's just the stuff you buy at the store.
Right.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yep. And everyone can have a pot or a window box. I kind of like those ideas. You know, makes it real handy, right close to your door where you can go out and cut some off.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, you can cut that lettuce off and it'll regrow that same plant. It takes a few weeks, but it will regrow. And you can do that up to 3 times. Then it's a good idea to pull them and reseed.
Yeah.
Because as it regrows every time, it starts to get a little bitter, and that's because that's that thing sending a signal to the plant that something keeps chewing me, so I better start making a chemical that is distasteful.
Yeah.
So that's what can happen to lettuce, but you can cut it for 2 to 3 times before it'll start doing that, and it'll regrow. So I guess I always preach that you should grow your own lettuce, you know, at any chance you get. Matter of fact, you can even grow it through the winter on a nice sunny windowsill, too.
I'm glad you brought that up, because a couple years ago, we really, really redid our garden. We had a really nice bed in a great area with, at a spot where it's a little bit downhill, and all the water would have run through the all the nutrients would be really built up in this bed. We redid the whole thing, and the first year that we started that garden, the two big ones, the most plentiful that we were able to harvest, was tomatoes and lettuce.
Yeah,
and we thought, boy, that lettuce sure was easy to grow. Let's do that again next year. We had tomatoes and peppers, I think, and we got a few cucumbers and this and that. But that lettuce was just, I mean, it was big and easy. And this year we are hoping to go, we're hoping maybe even next month that we'll be moving. So we weren't sure, should we start a garden? Should we maybe just try to plant some things in a planter box or on a windowsill or something? What should we do? And that's the perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it didn't is. Even think about it because we were wondering if we wanted to go with the things that you think of more often, the tomatoes, the whatever, but the lettuce is, it was so easy that why wouldn't you just grow it yourself?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And so you even brought up tomato, and a lot of scientific tests. I want to stress that scientific, because I will mention about scientific test in the garden here a lot this year. Scientific tests have been done of the store-bought tomatoes, because they go through a similar process that the lettuce goes through out there in Happy Valley. The tomato you grow at home compared to the tomato that you buy in a grocery store, of course, we all know they don't taste the same.
Mm-hmm.
But the nutrients in that is really totally different. The one that you grow your own can have up to 5 times more nutrients than the one that you bought at the store that was grown somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now there are for sale homegrown tomatoes too around. And that's a different thing. Because again, those plants really relied on growing in a bed in our soil and without pesticides and over fertilizing and so on. And I don't fault big agriculture for doing that. You know, they are feeding the world by producing crops quickly and abundantly. But if you get a chance to grow your own, you should be doing that your own. And tomato is, don't be afraid to treat it just like the lettuce. You can grow a tomato in a pot. You can grow a tomato in a 5-gallon bucket. Now, it may not be as big and lush as your neighbor that grew it in the ground, but it's still a good tomato, and you're still going to get that benefit of growing your own, that taste, and the increased nutrients.
Yeah. Yeah, the tomatoes were by far, I mean, the one that you could tell the biggest difference just between taste and the size that it gets to and all that stuff. So, yeah, we were kind of new at it just a couple of years ago, but it's one of the best decisions that we decided to make was to really restart that entire garden and stock it up and try to keep it plentiful.
Good for you.
And it's been paying dividends.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, we've actually run a couple minutes past 9 o'clock, so that's going to be this week's show. But that's The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith. If you have any questions, make sure that you send them in your email to garden@wesb.com. You can attach a picture if you need, and then next week, when our master gardener, Bob Harris, is back, he'll be able to answer those questions for you. We'll get your gardens right, get your lawn right, get your Mother's Day plants right, and all that good stuff. So thanks again for joining me today, Bob.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. And that's The Gardening Show, sponsored by Worth W. Smith on B107.5 FM.